We just climb aboard here.
That rattling sound turns out to be a little ominous.
Hi there, morning.
Hi there.
Where would you like us to sit?
Doesn't matter. Okay, well, I have to do one thing before we leave.
Sure.
I've plastic in my propeller.
Oh, really? Is that ironic or is that a hazard of the job?
It happens every now and then.
Is there a lot of plastic in the canals?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
The irony is that Captain Eric here is taking us on a special fishing trip in Amsterdam's canals, fishing for plastic. After some clonking and maintenance on the engine, electric naturally, it was time to set off on the boat, which itself is made of recycled plastic bottles fished out of the water of these canals.
Okay, so let's go.
Where are we going to go?
Anywhere you want.
Well, take us on a tour of the kind of work you do.
It's too easy to say, let's get rid of all plastic. I mean, that would be nice, but if we say that, let's undress, because then we will be naked. And everything is plastic.
Right, I mean, I'm looking at both of us here. We've got a lot of plastic in our clothes as well, you're right.
Yeah. But there is so much unnecessary plastic.
Sure.
Everything is in plastic, because there is no alternative for it. So the most important thing about that is to make sure that you dispose of it properly.
Okay.
That it doesn't get into the environment. Just look here, look. Plastic.
So there's a floating drinks bottle. There's a plastic bag. There's another drinks bottle coming up here, just floating. People have used the canal as a rubbish tip.
Look at this bag. That comes in the propeller.
And then you're a sheet of plastic there.
And then you're stuck.
Yeah.
All the plastic that comes in the canals ends up in the ocean. More than a million mammals just die each year of eating plastic.
This is the kind of job that might normally be done by volunteers. But this is a business with its own paying customers. It's called Plastic Whale. And we may be seeing a lot more of businesses like Plastic Whale, as protesters like Extinction Rebellion put pressure on companies to pay more attention to the effect they have, not only on the environment, but on society as a whole. Welcome to the impact economy. There may not be suits on the barricades just yet, but business is starting to realise that it needs to play a much more active part in making the world a better place.
Profits are paramount to everything a company does, though to remain in front of change, to be a part of a growth environment, I believe the involvement in a community to have a purpose is vital for long-term survivability, but long-term profitability.
That's Larry Fink, interviewed on CNBC at Davos last year, where the world's top business and economic leaders were meeting. He's the chairman and chief executive of the world's largest asset manager, BlackRock, which has around $6.5 trillion of investments. In his annual letter to CEOs last year, he stressed the business value of what he called purpose, not simply a pursuit of profit. The message seemed to be that companies cannot divorce themselves from global concerns. So how do businesses up their game when it comes to making an impact on the world? Well, one way is to embed those values into the way your company's run from the start.
So this is your garden. Wonderful.
This is my garden. So what
have we got here?
Grow lots of different organic herbs. So this is meadow sweet here. That is one of the plants that aspirin was first developed from.
Okay.
So, you know, so many of our medicines obviously have come from plants over the years.
Sebastian Pohl, or Seb as he's known to pretty much everyone in the company, is the co-founder and master herbsmith of Pucker Herbs, the people behind those brightly coloured boxes of premium herbal tea you find on the supermarket shelf. As he shows us around his garden near Bristol, Seb is clear about his company's purpose. It's even printed on the packaging: to connect people to the power of organic plants and to run a business that's a force for good.
And there's licorice over there as well. And it's got a compound in it that's 50 times sweeter than sugar with no calories. So we use a fair bit of licorice in our teas because it helps round the edge of the tea as well, so you get a proper cuppa.
No guesses as to what happens next. After our train journey from London, Seb is making my producer and me a revitalising cup of Pucker's Feel New Tea.
Collection of different seeds, fennel, aniseed, coriander, and it's primarily used for digestion. Uh-huh. The herbs in there are very high in essential oils, and so those essential oils help relax your digestive system, help you absorb more nutrients. So I think that would be very great, appropriate after your long trip. One of the big things about business is the obviously the impact it has on society and the environment. And so with Pucker, one of our areas we've been really looking at recently is our carbon impact, basically.
Oh, right, and this is a good place to start because we're boiling the kettle now to have a cup of tea, and so all the customers have a carbon impact, presumably.
Exactly. So we found out that in our total chain from seed to cup, if you like, 50% of that impact is in boiling the kettle.
50%?
Yeah.
Of the whole
of Pucker's carbon output.
Is us lot boiling the kettle to make the cuppa?
Us as consumers. And so we have such power as individuals in terms of how we choose to get our electricity and how we choose to buy our food. You know, we don't all have a lot of power of influence. We're not all necessarily politicians or running businesses. But in our daily choices, we can really influence that.
Both at Seb's home and in Pucker's headquarters, the electricity comes from local renewable sources, and there's a big emphasis on cutting the company's carbon footprint. Take all those herbs and seeds, for example, which are imported from 50 countries around the world.
The intention is to ship everything by boat, basically, so it comes by sea, which in the climate impact measurement we just talked about, our transportation is, I think, about 6%. So that's in and out. Shipping by boat, of course, uses energy, but it's the best way to do it.
Pucker proudly says it donates 1% of its turnover to environmental and social causes. It's also what's called a B Corp, meaning it's signed up to monitor and continually improve its impact on workers, suppliers and customers, as well as on the environment.
And you can see that all of this is made from plants, really. So obviously
the tea bag paper is made
from... it's called abaca, a type of hemp paper. And then the string is made from organic cotton. Mm-hmm. And then our sachet that we put the herbal tea bag in is also recyclable. So that's what we try and do, not just our bit, but to do what we think is the way businesses should be run.
And I think you mean all businesses should be run.
I mean all businesses. We started in 2001 with £4,000. And we've had an amazing journey being environmental health activists, serving millions of people with incredible herbal tea.
Seb set up Pucker Herbs with his co-founder Tim Westwell. And as he talks about the company, you notice how often he uses the words ethical and sustainable.
What do you mean by sustainable? What does that mean for you?
Well, I think it's a very easy word to say and potentially difficult to live up to. And we don't want to just tread water. We need to be making sure we're putting back in more than we take out. And so I think business needs to move to a more regenerative approach to working.
But does it mean that the company survives a long time? Does it mean that the community survives? Does it mean that the planet survives? What do you mean by sustainable?
All three of those, without a doubt. I mean, sustainability, in a business sense, you have to be profitable to put that investment back in so that the business can grow. It should only grow, though, if it's based on the sustainability of the people that you work with, but also your value chain. You know, it's not a supply chain, it's your value chain, your partners that might be packaging, processing, etc. But also, in our case, the growers we work with.
In many ways, Pucker is a premium product.
Yeah.
Is this the future of sustainable business? This is the future of the impact economy, that basically we consumers will have to be paying more so that all the people down that value chain will be benefiting?
Yes, basically. We do need to pay more. Having a cheap food economy is driving the environment into a disgraceful state. You know, there's an environmental crisis, and we as individuals have been a part of that. I think that we are not paying the embodied cost. We're kicking that cost down the line. It's been well documented. For every £1 we spend on food, there's another £1 on cost to society through health costs or environmental costs. And we need to act. It should be that businesses, the polluter, should be paying. business has to serve society. It's not about serving shareholders. I disagree with that. You know, one of the problems is business has taken us beyond the Earth's limits of providing for us safely. And now we've got all the information, there's no excuse, we have to change.
In September 2017, Pukka Herbs was bought by the British-Dutch consumer goods and food giant Unilever. That caused some consternation among Pukka fans. But Seb argues that Pukka Herbs is still run as an independent subsidiary, maintaining its values and purpose, and that it could make a difference to Unilever itself.
We're trying to create more dialogue. And if we can work within Unilever and can use them as a trampoline for our mission and vision, all the better. And if they can learn from us and we can learn from them, then that will only benefit everybody.
It's the first day of term here at the Said Business School at the University of Oxford, and these MBA students have come together for a lecture on the nature of the corporation.
I'm going to start off by telling you a bit about the purpose of business, why business exists and what it's there to do.
There's that word again, purpose. In his lecture, Colin Mayer, who is Professor of Management Studies, is emphasising the changing nature of business, away from simply being a means of making profit to something more embedded in society. And he brings up an important name.
By Milton Friedman, the Nobel Prize-winning economist, in 1962, when he said that there is one and only one social purpose of business: to increase profits so long as it stays within the rules of the game.
For Colin Mayer, the problem with Milton Friedman's notion is that it's led to inequality, environmental degradation, and a mistrust of business. And he says it's not even how business has been done for most of its history.
Profit was not predominantly why business was created. The corporation was established under Roman law, for example, 2,000 years ago, to perform a very public function. It's only over the last 60 years that this notion that there is only one purpose of business, namely to make money, has arisen. The way in which business needs to conceive itself is as a way of producing profitable solutions to the problems of people and planet. The best businesses do exactly that, and they don't profit from producing problems for people or planet.
Now, this is a big shift for business. No one's denying this. How are we going to make sure it actually happens? Whose responsibility is that?
It's the responsibility of virtually all parties associated with business: government, lawmakers, regulators, owners, shareholders, investors, and those running business themselves. First of all, we need to change the law. We need to change the law so that it reflects the fact that fundamental duty of those running companies should be to their purposes. We need to ensure that owners of companies, shareholders and investors, recognize their responsibilities to companies, as well as their rights and rewards in terms of financial returns. We need to have the governance of companies, their boards, the way in which they oversee the running of companies, focused on company purpose. And we need to measure things appropriately in terms of the way in which we account for and evaluate the performance of companies.
Strong words and a big challenge for business owners. It's not easy to turn around a company that until now has been dedicated to that Friedmanite pursuit of profit. But luckily there's a charity that's been thinking hard about this. It's called Blueprint for Better Business, and it was set up after the 2008 financial crisis. And what they've done is put together a set of five principles, handily laid out here on a piece of A4 card, about what a purpose-driven business might look like. It says it should deliver long-term sustainable performance. One of the other principles says being honest and fair with customers and suppliers. There's one here about being a responsible and responsive employer. And then there's a broader one here about being a guardian for future generations.
Main train, it's time to relax. Fratelli. Enjoy a great read.
We're speeding along the English countryside at the moment on the way to the northwest of the country, and even the train company here has a mission statement and a purpose showing its commitment to the impact economy. There's a little leaflet which says our mission is to minimize our environmental footprint, focus on sustainable packaging choices, create a positive impact, reduce levels of waste, etc. etc. And I'm on my way to Liverpool to see how even cities are getting into the impact economy.
Nice to meet you.
Hi, yeah.
Why don't you introduce yourself?
Okay, so I'm Councillor Jane Corbett. Welcome to Liverpool.
Thank
I represent
you,
the Everson Ward, but I'm also, I do the lead for the Mayor on fairness and tackling poverty across the city. So you've just come into beautiful Lime Street.
Jane Corbett is a welcoming, smiling bundle of energy. She takes us to a viewpoint overlooking Everton Ward, one of the poorest parts of the city.
You've got the Irish Sea, you look over there, you've got Birkenhead. Then right in the distance, you've got the Welsh Hills. You've got the Liver building.
Yeah.
You see the Liver building with the Liver beds on the top?
The Liver beds on the top, yeah.
Basically, you've got Liverpool spread out in front of you from the top park in Everton.
Jane is trying to turn Liverpool into what she calls a fair city, and she's using the five principles drawn up by Blueprint for Better Business to do it.
I mean, there's all sorts of stuff in there that actually, when you look at it, it's I love it. So an example of us changing as a council is that if you look at the Blueprint principles, top left, I don't think visually.
Well, I've got them here, so let's get them out. So top left.
So top left talks about...
Here we go.
Here we are. Honest and fair with customers and suppliers. Treats suppliers fairly, pays promptly what it owes and expects its suppliers to do the same. Okay, so we are now up to 99% of our suppliers getting paid within 30 days. Now, you can say, well, you should have been doing 100% years ago. Yeah, but we've moved up. Then if you look at other places, so we're making sure that in the council, we've got the real living wage. In fact, we pay just above that. But not only that, because it's no point being living wage accredited if all you do is pay the real living wage, because you might pay 1 hour a week. Well, what use is that? So we make sure that we've got decent terms and conditions, but also that you get this whole thing about in-work training and in-work progression. It's very basic economics that is good economics, and it's good for people and it's good for cities.
And it's good economics because it's sustainable economics.
Yeah.
It allows
yeah.
businesses to last longer.
Yeah. If we have really bad wages and really bad conditions and people are screwed down, then productivity just drops through the floor. So when people talk about productivity, normally they think visually about race to the bottom. What we're talking about is a race to the top.
The canal is full of these Heineken plastic wrappings. There's the same sort of thing when you buy a six-pack of Coca-Cola. Oh no, it's Amstel beer, a red one.
Water leak outside.
I'm back in Amsterdam on my fishing trip with the company Plastic Whale.
Oh, sorry. Marius!
Hi, Marius. Are you coming on or are we getting off?
I can get on the boat.
I'm Marius Smit. I'm the founder and captain of Plastic Whale. We're the first professional plastic fishing company in the world.
Marius had the idea for Plastic Whale when he and his wife were staying on a beautiful beach in northern Borneo.
What is the solution for this pollution?
One morning we woke up and the weather was really bad because there had been a typhoon hundreds of kilometers north of Borneo. And the beach that we were staying at was just engulfed by plastic waste. And I'd never heard of the phenomenon called plastic super there. I saw it with my own eyes.
Marius decided to start a company that would make the world a better place, not one that generated more waste. Plastic Whale has now been in business for 4 years.
Why a company? Why not, for example, get a grant, set up a project, get volunteers to do this kind of work? Why a company?
Because economics, I think, solves problems. And as long as you create great value, then more and more people are willing to pay for it, and then you got a self-sustaining but also a growing model.
All of Plastic Whale's boats are sponsored, and last year the company had 9,000 paying customers, picking up plastic in Amsterdam and Rotterdam. Some of the plastic is recycled into the company's boats. The decks, for example, are made from those little plastic tops you get on bottles of fizzy drinks. and they've turned plastic into furniture which they sell. Marius also gives presentations to companies, some very large ones, at home and abroad. And he's now looking at ways to expand to Indonesia and the United States by partnering up with other companies with similar values.
We can't deny anymore that we need to change things. I see now with all the companies that we are visiting that they're really serious about changing things, but they don't know how to change things because they're stuck within these old structures. I'm not naive in the sense that I believe that everybody will change, you know? Some people just don't care, and they will never care. But I think if it's becoming the new norm to do things differently, also because companies who are attracting new talent, for instance, they need to explain to the new talent what they are doing to make the world a bit better. And if they can't explain that anymore and their next competitor does that better, they lose that talent as well.
And what would you say to a business owner who's hearing this and saying, well, that's fair enough, but you know what, I'm going to stick to the old style of doing business. I'm going to focus on the financial bottom line, making a good return for my shareholders, low prices, high turnover. That's the way I'm going to be doing business for the future.
Well, he or she is a dinosaur. You can sustain your business for a while, but eventually you're gonna die as a business.
My name's Katie Hill, and I'm part of the B Lab team. B Lab is the not-for-profit that's rolling out the B Corp movement across the world.
B Corp is an accreditation that businesses can work towards to demonstrate that their values go beyond simple profit. There are now B Corps in more than 50 countries. Plastic Whale is one of them. The bar to become a B Corp is high. Companies go through a performance assessment every 2 or 3 years, looking at how all the different parts of the businesses are run.
They then have to commit to the concept of creating a really meaningful impact on society and the environment by lodging that statement and declaration into their company articles. So then the board has to govern this business on that basis. So it still has to serve its shareholders, but they don't take dominance over all other stakeholders. And then the third thing they do is they sign a declaration of interdependence, which is a commitment to say that the world we want to create is the world I've got to be part of, and I've got to do my bit to make it, and I'm part of a much bigger system than myself, so I need to do what I can to create that.
But doesn't all that mean lower profits? Surely making a business carbon neutral, for example, involves a lot of investment, and in a tight market, not every consumer will be happy to pay more for your goods. Well, yes and no, says Katie Hill.
Of course, that's going to have some short-term effect on your profits. But long-term, what are the possibilities that your business is still operating when other businesses aren't? As you see the whole momentum for our urgency of the climate change dimension is such that we have to change business quickly. Who's going to do this quickly and efficiently and in a really comprehensive way to be leaders in this field? Those ones are going to have the market share. They're going to be the only ones, I think, who are going to be existing in 30, 40, hopefully longer year time, not the ones that are sort of still holding on to their old concepts because they say short-term profits have got to make us stick with what we know. I think that's a big risk.
Supporters of impact businesses are confident that consumers and workers will favour companies that sign up to the impact values. They argue that millennials especially are keener to work for companies that they see are doing good than for more traditional employers. But in business, it's money that really talks. And the big push towards a more impactful economy is coming from investors.
We have around 500 billion euros of assets under management that we manage on behalf of 5 Dutch pension funds, and we serve 4.5 million Dutch people with their pensions.
Claudia Cruz is the Managing Director for Global Responsible Investment and Governance at APG. They're the asset managers who invest the Dutch government's civil service pension fund, ABP. The fund uses the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals as a guideline. These include targets for poverty, hunger, clean energy and climate action.
14% of ABP's portfolio is considered to be really making a positive social and environmental contribution to the Sustainable Development Goals. But our entire portfolio can be considered to be making a positive impact, because we use our voting rights at the AGMs of companies, where we can be a force for change when it comes to who sits on the board, who sets the policy for the board, what is the company's approach to sustainability and being a responsible company. And all our investments have to be assessed in the context of risk, return, cost, and sustainability across the entire portfolio of 500 billion.
I guess a cynic would say, or a pure economist would say, is that really your job to be worrying about carbon over there or living conditions here? Isn't your job to get the best return from your investments for your pension holders?
And I think the realization is there. In order to get the best risk-adjusted returns, you actually have to address climate risk, because it's a real risk to your investments. Literally, flooding if you build near coastal areas. You see increasing and tougher regulation, which makes it more costly for investments. You also see that more energy-efficient buildings can attract better rents. And of course, you have the transition risks, where certain assets will become obsolete unless they adjust to a low-carbon economy. We, in fact, sold 7 coal companies last year. And unless investors play a part in the transition to a low-carbon economy, there simply isn't an economy anymore to invest in or for people to live in.
It's too early to know what impact the impact economy will have. There are still questions about how, for example, you really measure the effect of what companies are doing. And in a globalized world, for the impact economy to be truly effective, doesn't it have to be adopted by companies and countries everywhere? But across the board, investors, companies, and consumers, people's values do seem to be changing. And wherever you are, there's little doubt that the clock is ticking.
It's massively urgent. Let's not muck around here. Millions of lives are at stake. Billions of animals' lives are at stake. The coral reef system. Let's implement the changes that we know we need to do to have sustainable agriculture, a reliable, sustainable energy supply to create a healthy economy.
Really, I think the science is telling us there's just no option. I mean, yesterday was way too late. This is desperately urgent. This is the biggest single problem I think we face as a global society.